This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how a travel advisor can get you perks you didn't know existed, and which flight deals are actual deals, and which are clickbait. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Are you still there? To delete this message, press 7. To save it in the archives, press 9. To hear more options, press 0.
What are you talking about?
Well, hello, Katie.
Hello, Erin.
Welcome back to Postcards, where we just share some fun, sometimes insightful travel stories and unpack them as we love to do on Curious Tourism. Mm-hmm. This is our second postcard, and I'm excited for it. I found what I think is an interesting story to chat about. And yeah, it's just nice to have this like one-on-one time with you. Not that I don't love our guests, but you know.
Can I just say it is nice to be doing these episodes because we, like, in between regular episodes, I come across so many random things that I'm like, oh, we got to talk about this on the show. Oh, we got to talk about this on the show. Oh, we got to talk about this on the show. And we just, there's not enough time in the world. So yeah. I am pretty pumped about these episodes.
All right. So I have, I think, a good one today. Okay, so I'm going to dive right into it. My media of the month came to me through TikTok. This is something I've noticed about TikTok versus Instagram. You get more of the like raw venting on TikTok, which I think makes it more interesting in general. All right. So, Katie, do you know the landmark Christ the Redeemer?
Ooh, it sounds familiar, but all I can think of is the landmark in Brazil with like the giant Jesus on the hill. Yeah, is that the one?
That's Christ the Redeemer.
Okay.
So it's a massive like Art Deco statue of Jesus Christ. It's in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and it's positioned on top of Corcovado Mountain, which is just outside the city. Mm-hmm. So from what I can tell, I haven't been to Brazil, but what I can tell is like you go up there, like the statue's huge, which is cool. And then like you have like a beautiful view of the city. Yeah.
And the statue sort of just like looks over the whole city too. It's a very like intense thing.
Yes, yes. So I stumbled across a video made by pretty well-known travel creator Emily from at Hudson and Emily. And in it, she argues that this landmark should not be included as one of the seven wonders of the world.
Oh, interesting.
So let's hold that thought for a moment because this opened up like a huge rabbit hole for me because to be honest, I haven't thought about the seven world wonders in a really long time. Mm-hmm. Growing up, like, I think I was given a book or something about the world wonders, like, at some point. And I do remember being, like, amazed by the concept and thinking, like, oh, I want to see all of them.
No, this was me, too. I also had a book.
Yeah, like, I think we all did. Like, I'll have to check when they came up with the seven world wonders, but it was like in our like late childhood, maybe teenagehood. Yeah. And I do remember when I visited the Colosseum, I was 19 at the time. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this is so cool because it's my first world wonder. But I don't know that I really thought about it ever since. Like, that's the last time that I remember like thinking about the world wonders.
I'm just like, you bringing up world wonders for me right now is just like, oh yeah, I forgot those were a thing.
Literally, this was me when I came across this on TikTok. I was like, oh yeah, like that's something people talk about. Do you know what the seven world wonders are?
I feel like, I think one of them isn't one of them Niagara Falls?
No.
It's not, okay.
So there's all these like different versions of the world wonders. So we're talking about the seven new world wonders, they call them. But I think Niagara Falls is considered one of like the natural world wonders.
Yeah, I think I'm more familiar with the natural world wonders or something along those lines. Because I think I always thought that a world wonder, and the more I say the world wonder, it sounds weird in my head. But I always thought that that's what a world wonder was like something that like was formed by the earth and was like kind of magnificent.
So do you know what the other ones might be?
Is the CN Tower one?
No.
Okay.
Think older.
The Great Wall of China?
Yes. So okay. We have the Great Wall of China, Christ the Redeemer, the Colosseum. There's one that you know I've been to. It's in India. The Taj Mahal. Petra in Jordan.
Yes. Ooh, that's a good one.
That was definitely like, I didn't think it at the time, but thinking back, I'm like, yeah, that's definitely a world wonder.
Yeah.
Machu Picchu, Chichen Itza in Mexico. Yeah. So those are the seven.
Okay.
This is a pervasive question. Do you think that all these landmarks should be on the list of world wonders?
I don't know. I think it just depends on what your definition of a world wonder is, because for me, like, I can't help but feel like a part of the natural world should be incorporated in there. For me, like, Petra is a really cool example because it's like built into like stone, right? Or I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. Neither did I. So we're going to talk about the criteria for being a world wonder.
Please.
The first thing to mention is that these are the new world wonders. I did mention this, but it's an important point. The old seven wonders of the world refers to a list from ancient times that was created by Greek historians to highlight remarkable human-made structures, mostly in the Mediterranean and Middle East. The only thing left over from that old list is the Great Pyramid of Giza, which you might notice is missing from the new World Wonders. The seven wonders of the world, the new ones, were chosen in 2007, and they're meant to represent human-made landmarks from around the world that still stand today. There is no official or consistent set of criteria for being named one of the new seven wonders of the world. And this is because the list was created through a global public vote that was organized by a private foundation.
Oh, interesting.
So this is where the criticism comes in. Selections were based largely on popularity, visual impact, and just like global recognition. Instead of a set of criteria that some people argue should be historical and cultural and like of architectural significance. A lot of people assume that there's like a connection between UNESCO and the new wonders of the world. There's not. Unlike UNESCO's process, the selection process for the seven world wonders does not involve any like expert evaluation. It doesn't involve any like standardized heritage criteria. Mm-hmm. So to circle back to Christ the Redeemer, in her video, Emily argues that this landmark doesn't deserve to be a world wonder because it's not very old compared to the other landmarks on the list.
Okay.
It was built less than 100 years ago. It's not the tallest statue of Jesus Christ in the world, so it doesn't really stand out for that point either. Mm-hmm. And after I found Emily, I was like, ooh, I wonder what like other people on TikTok are saying about this. And I found that this is actually like a widely held view on TikTok. Like a lot of people are making videos arguing that Christ the Redeemer shouldn't be included. And the main argument is that it isn't pre-industrial. It's a modern statue. So it was completed in 1931. And if you compare it to like everything else, like Petra, like these wonders are like ancient or at least centuries old. And a lot of them have like major significance, like historically. Mm-hmm. The other criticism is that it's very religiously symbolic, which some people think like shouldn't be part of the criteria. The focus should be like it being a feat of like ancient engineering or like large scale construction. Like the Great Wall of China, like that was like a huge accomplishment.
It's insane.
But part of the reason it is because it was built in a time when we didn't have the technology. In 1931, you can argue like building Christ the Redeemer was a lot easier because we had all this technology. A quick side note. So the Pyramid of Giza is not in the list, which is like probably the most blatant thing. Like, I think the average person you talk to would assume that the Pyramid of Giza in Egypt is part of this list. The reason it's not is because Egypt rejected the new Seven Wonders campaign. And Egypt argued that ancient heritage shouldn't be subject to a popularity vote. They also said in a statement that the Great Pyramid doesn't need revalidation. It's already a world wonder. And I was like, I love this. I love. Yeah. Thank you, Egypt. Thank you for saying it out loud.
That's great, because honestly, I've never been, but I've seen photos from numerous friends who've gone, and even just from the photos, it's like pretty wonderful.
Listen, you all know that I'm not a conspiracy theorist by like any stretch, but I do love some ancient aliens.
Yes.
So I just love watching like people theorize about how the pyramids and other ancient structures were built. Oh, another interesting side note. When Luke and I were on our world trip, we didn't go to Egypt. It was like a big part of our plan to go. Mm-hmm. And the reason we didn't is because they introduced literally like 2 months before we left on the trip, new visa requirements that involved like having to go physically to like an office in Canada to get your visa. Mm-hmm. And we would have had to travel like quite far and stay somewhere for a week to get these visas. So we sadly had to cancel it. But we discovered recently that they have removed this. It's back to the e-visa. So that's good news for us. Anyways, so the last thing I've seen creators argue about this list is that Christ the Redeemer may have made it onto the list because Brazil had a huge voting push. They had like a massive marketing campaign around it and around having like its own citizens vote for it to be part of the Seven World Wonders. Mm-hmm. So people argue that like it made it onto the list because of that versus historical importance. So, with all this, what do you think?
I'm not particularly a fan of popularity contests.
Me neither.
So
that's why this is a tough question.
So it's a really hard question. I'm obviously feeling a little bit of a type of way when it comes to like one sort of religion being held to like the highest standard on a global front. And I kind of agree, too, that it should be more ancient things that are in this list, or that should qualify to be in the running, at least. Because to me, what makes a world wonder is something that's like stood the test of time. And yeah, one that like the natural world is part of the natural world, too, in some capacity, is like built with nature in mind. Yeah, just like will stand the test of time.
I literally just Googled, was Christ the Redeemer hard to build? It was challenging. Yes,
it's on like a hilltop.
It's
so
on
it
a mountain.
Really challenging.
Yeah.
Like one thing that's like standing out to me here is that like the Great Wall of China and the pyramids were likely built with slaves, and that is something that I don't know. I'm not 100% sure because it was the 30s. Whether or not Christ the Redeemer was built with, maybe it was built like in a more ethical way when it comes to like labor or something like that. But I have no idea. This is something that I think is worth looking into.
Yeah, I do think the criteria should probably be set at the very least. Like for this, it shouldn't just be a popularity contest. In my mind, like they would all be pre-industrially built just because it like ties them all together.
I think the Colosseum is a solid choice, especially since it's like, it's just still there in some capacity, like even like planks of wood.
That's the thing I wanted to say about this. I feel I haven't been to Christ the Redeemer, so I don't know how I would feel like seeing it. But I know that all the other ones that I've seen, like the Taj Mahal, definitely Petra, definitely the Colosseum. Like when I saw these things, I was blown away by the fact that I knew they had been there for so long and that mm-hmm. people had like lived life around these structures. I don't know, like that tripped me out about them. And I don't know that Christ the Redeemer would like awaken that same feeling in me. Who knows though?
Not for another few centuries at least.
And I feel like it gets murky to say this, but like maybe historians should decide. But then I think to myself, historians are biased. So I don't know if that works either.
The idea of what places in the world has made the public like constantly be like, wow, this is amazing. Because like,
and maybe that's why the idea was to do a public vote.
Exactly. But I feel like public votes and popularity contests are always sort of like skewed in some direction anyway. Like whoever has the best marketing, whoever has like the most resources to put towards marketing and all of that stuff.
Mm.
I don't know if the Seven Wonders of the World are ranked by like number one to number seven. So if it was just a blank slate of seven, that's nice because there's not one that's sort of better
than
the other.
But why seven?
Why seven?
I hate to say it, but like, I don't think this list should exist. Like, there's way more than seven wonders, if you ask me.
There's
like,
so many.
Humans, we're just obsessed with lists. Like,
yeah.
Can we just agree there's tons of world wonders? Because there are. Well, I wanted to ask you this. Like, what do you think should be on the list that's not?
Well, I was just going to say, I personally am a fan of the natural wonders of the world. Obviously, Niagara Falls is one. Any of, like, the glaciers that are around the world could qualify. The coral reefs and that type of stuff. Like, I don't know. I'm more into, like, the nature side of things.
Mount Everest.
The problem is that the natural side is that, like, they become places that people want to visit more and more if you were to, like, put them on a list. I mean, all of these places are still places that people are, like, over-visiting anyway. But yeah. I don't know. I'm just, like, I like the natural side of things.
I would add, I mean, like, obviously, like, I know Egypt, like, said they don't need to be on the list, but I do think that the Great Pyramid should be on there.
Putting you on the list anyway.
Yeah. I also would add Bagan because it used to be the capital of the Pagan Kingdom in Myanmar. And what makes it so special is it's like this massive number of temples, like more than 2,000 of them, which are scattered across this like beautiful landscape. And the temples are like over 1,000 years old. And there's just like so many of them. It's like the volume of them that is so wild. Mm-hmm. Like you'll be up on one temple and you'll look out and there's just so many temples everywhere. And it's one of the most important like cultural and religious sites in the country. And that was just like a place that always stood out to me that like, wow, I really felt the wonder. Okay. Some people say Angkor Wat, which yeah, it's a temple in Cambodia, like a very popular, well-known temple that really is amazing.
And it's worth noting that a lot of these are all religious sites too.
But they're not religious symbolism. That's what I was reading is like the criticism. It's like you couldn't have like a statue of Buddha, but like a space that's like built for worship, but not religious symbolism itself, like a temple is okay. That was like the argument, but I don't know. You could really get into the weeds about that.
I know.
There's also another site that I think is interesting that a lot of people don't know about is Gunung Padang in West Java in Indonesia, which like there's claims that this is the remnants of a prehistoric pyramid that dates back to 27,000 years ago, which would make it like significantly older than the pyramids in Egypt. So I feel like that could belong on the new Seven Wonders list.
I think this is a blog post that's calling your name, Erin.
Petition.
Pina travels.
Like, really, my petition is to like do away with the list and just agree that like the entire world is a wonder.
Yeah, this is actually an open letter.
Yeah. Well, so that's my
I'm so
my
glad
rant.
You brought that because I haven't thought about the wonders of the world in so long. And it is such an important part of the travel industry, I think. I think still like a lot of the public is still maybe basing some of their travel decisions on like, can we see one of them?
There's definitely, and I found this on TikTok too. There's definitely people out there that are like purposefully traveling to all of the seven wonders.
Okay. Should I share my media of the month?
Mm-hmm.
It's about scams. I came across a video on Instagram and I just want to read you the caption of it. And then we can like unpack this because it's made me sort of like think about what we mean by scams and what we qualify as a scam and who we qualify scams to. So I'm going to read this to you. I'm not going to mention who the creator is because I don't want anyone to like come for them or anything like that. Okay. My husband and I were walking to the War Remnants Museum in Ho Chi Minh City. We were about 2 minutes away from the museum when we got approached by a guy holding a bamboo stick carrying coconuts. He started talking to my husband, shaking hands, asking him questions, being really friendly. Then he offered for my husband to hold the stick carrying the coconuts, which my husband did. After a minute or so, he took the stick back, but put it down on the floor, opened the case, and handed me a coconut. Both my husband and I tried to refuse, but he was very insistent, so I took the coconut. He then took another coconut out and started to slice it open. Something about this in that moment felt wrong, and I also knew that nothing in this world is free. He would open the coconuts, hand them to us, and then he was free to charge us whatever he felt like. In that moment, I became insistent and said no thank you and handed him the coconut back. Suddenly, the smile on his face vanished and he seemed so annoyed. Without another word, my husband and I quickly walked away. When I came home, I researched this and realized that this is a common scam and that many people, unfortunately, do fall prey to it. I have since gone down a rabbit hole of all these scams in Vietnam and have stopped engaging when we are approached on the streets. Always remember that nothing is ever free. Always follow my instincts. Not to engage with anyone that approaches me on the street. Always do my research and go through the official channels, especially when booking sites or tours, etc. Have you had any experiences like this? So this to me stood out because for some reason, as I was reading those, that caption in the video, I couldn't help but compare it to like how we think about scams in North America. And like a scam to me, I think people are always sort of sussing out scams from like used car salesmen. Or even these days, like we're telling our parents that like AI might call you and it might sound like me and they might tell you that I'm being held for ransom for $5,000 and like not to trust them. And so like with my parents and I, we've set up like a code word because my voice is on the internet enough that people could probably mimic it. And so when I think about this video and how the scam in this case is like, this guy sort of tricked you into giving him what, like $20 for a coconut, paying for like a couple of coconuts, and the severity of like her messaging around it. I'm like, I don't know. It makes me feel icky about like saying that people in Vietnam are putting out all these like hardcore scams to really screw over tourists and people when it's kind of just like taking advantage of them a little bit. But I don't know if I would call it like a scam. Like I think most sales tactics are a little bit tricky, but I don't know, to like put this messaging out to say like, don't talk to anyone who approaches you, to me is like crazy. That's crazy talk. The ideal travel experience is to get to know people of the place that you're visiting. I don't know. How do you feel about this?
I agree with you to a degree, but...
Because this is the thing. You've been to Vietnam and I haven't.
I've been to many countries where scams like these are extremely prevalent. And it is very true that you have to be very cautious when people approach you. But I will say, you kind of develop like, I don't know, like radar for it, I guess. Like, I feel as though Luke and I have like a radar about what kind of approach is happening. A good telltale sign is if they're holding things. If they're holding anything, you know, they're going to try to get you to take it, or like, I don't know, you just kind of develop radar around it. And I have fallen for these scams. Yeah. Like in my early days of travel, I definitely did. I think this is just like a universal experience. And the other thing is like these quote unquote scams have been happening for time immemorial all across the world and they will continue to. It's just part and parcel with like travel. It's just going to happen.
Yeah. Like for the longest time, this has been part of the marketplace.
Yeah. It reminds me of like the classic like taxi quote unquote scam. Like that happened to Luke and I all the time. You overpay for a taxi. And it's like you say, it's like in the whole scheme of things, like, yes, does it feel frustrating to feel as though you were taken advantage of? Yes. But in the scope of a trip, the amount of money that comes of these scams, like generally isn't that high. Although there are some that do snowball into very expensive and arguably dangerous scams. There's like more complex scams that I've heard of happening, like especially I've heard of one in Turkey where like you end up in a bar and then suddenly you're paying like the bar bill for like $2,000 worth.
Yeah.
So I don't want to like minimize the potential for these to become like more devastating, but...
Yeah.
These like sort of on the street, someone approaches you and hands you something situations like, yeah, like if you end up falling for it, just like pay some money and move on, I guess.
Yeah. I looked up the definition of a scam to see like, is this, are we really calling it what it is? And this is just from like Oxford Dictionary. And a scam is a dishonest scheme or fraud. And then as an example, it put like an insurance scam. Mm. And it also used the word, the verb is to swindle. And it was used, a guy that scams the elderly out of their savings. So this is where I was like, these are much more significant, like, bundles of money that, like, a scam is sort of, like, inferring just in the examples. Yeah. I guess a scam could really be, like, also a $20 bill, but I don't know. It just feels icky to me when it's sort of, like, I guess it's sort of, there's must be, like, a lot of these, like, sort of street vendors who are doing this. But it just feels weird to me when it's, like, being referred to, like, people in specific countries versus, like, kind of what we deal with all the time in North American capitalism is, like, we're dealing with scams on a regular basis. And, like, we can't even really trust the corporations that we're supposed to buy insurance from, like, let alone.
I think what upsets people about it, because I've seen posts like this, too. I think what gets people upset about it is, like, you do know that it's happening because people have clocked you as a Westerner who has money to spend. But, like, that, I'm sorry, is just the reality of traveling in other countries. Like, we have a lot of privilege and people can see that. At the end of the day, like, paying $10 for a coconut, like, whatever.
And if somebody, you know, later on that day asks you to carry their coconuts... Yeah. I mean,
it's a cool picture.
You've fallen for it one time, so maybe you could say, like, I already had a coconut today.
I mean, we don't know. They didn't say in the post, like, how much they were asked for.
Yeah.
Because that would be interesting information to know. But
yeah. Also, in those scenarios, like, I don't know, I'm sure there's, like, a level of, like, fear that you might feel, like, just being like, no, and walking away, like this couple did. Like, they didn't pay for the coconuts or anything like that. Mm. But I can imagine, like, some people feel like a level of fear to walk away. But I mean, it is an option. Like, you can just sort of say, like, no, I didn't want this, and kind of continue on. Compared to, like, scams in, I keep bringing back to, like, insurance scams or scams where people, like, call you and stuff and take, like, all of your credit card information to, like, the elderly kind of thing.
Yeah, that's different. Like, I feel like
those are, like, that to me is a scam. That to me is a scam. That to me is fraud. And comparing it to, like, these little instances to me, I don't know. It feels like there's microaggressions there, but it's hard to, like, point out exactly.
I don't know. I've never, like, really thought about this in depth. The big one is, like, the bracelet one. Like, someone will come to you and put a bracelet on you. And you're like, oh, this is so nice and beautiful. And then they want money. But I'm trying to think of, like, what we've done when this has happened to us. The thing is, it doesn't happen to us that often anymore because I feel like Luke and I's radar is so, like, locked in now. From what I recall, like, it definitely happened to us a couple times in India. And I'm pretty sure we just paid, like, some money, not always exactly what they asked for, and that would always, like, just end it. Like, they got something, we moved on. I don't know if I would ever, like, walk away from that entirely. Like, you say, I would be too nervous, but I think you're right. I don't think this, like, constitutes, like, a scam.
Yeah.
Those do exist, though. They do exist.
They do, like, exist
on the travel scene. These don't count, I don't think.
Yeah, the bar thing is something that I've seen in my research on Japan as well, is, like, being careful of people who invite you for, like, a night out kind of thing.
Yeah.
Also, some of these things, especially in, like, larger cities too, where things are a bit busier, can be risky for human trafficking. That's stuff to look out for. But these little, like, coconut experiences landing you on, like, do not trust people, nothing in this world is free, is just, like, kind of audacious to me.
She's not wrong, though. It is true.
I will say, like, if you're going to get anything for free or accept anything from someone for free, maybe it's somebody that you've known for at least, like, a day kind of thing. Because gift giving is a nice and beautiful thing that humans should do more. But if it's in, like, a marketplace or it's sort of, like, off the street and somebody that you've never met before that's giving you a gift, I think it's safe to assume that it's maybe not a gift.
I think that's the key. The terms of the interaction. If someone has just come out of nowhere and approached you, you're pretty safe to assume, like, this is a quote-unquote scam. But, like, I'm thinking about other times where I've had, like, really nice interactions with people where they've given me things, like, while traveling, mostly food. And those are interactions that came out of, like, they started out as just, like, us seeing, like, making eye contact and then starting to chat. And, like, it didn't, the launch wasn't, like, take this thing from me. It, like, evolved into that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I do.
There was a relationship built for a little
bit. I'm going back to the radar thing. I think you can develop like a bit of radar around this.
Yeah. I would almost call it paid experience radar rather than scam radar. Yeah. I mean, you can have scam radar too. I think that's important. I think having scam radar is very important.
It's funny. I will say, like, I always get such a kick out of this. I think it's so hilarious. Sometimes I've seen, like, I saw this a lot in Morocco, tourists that are like approaching these people, like, because they want to pay for that experience.
Yeah. And they will gladly accept it too, right?
Like, this is a horrible thing that happens, like, in Marrakesh, but, like, there's a lot of people there with, like, captive monkeys. And if you get too close to them or they're snakes, they will put these animals on you and they will demand that you pay them.
Yeah.
And I absolutely hate this. Like, I hate everything about it. Like, I hate that these animals are captive. And I also am terrified of monkeys and snakes. And so I steer, like, majorly clear every time I've been in Marrakesh. But I've literally seen tourists, like, go to them because they want to.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny when you see that go down.
Okay, well, that was all I had to share about scams. I thought it was interesting. I thought there was some bold language in there about just, like, avoiding this stuff altogether.
Yeah.
And nothing in this world is free. Okay, Erin, I had one more thing to share with you before we wrap up here. I actually saw this on a newsletter. They were linking to, like, it said, we love this travel glow-up trend that's circulating on TikTok. And this glow-up trend is the before and after of people who've gone backpacking for, like, a significant period of time, like either a month to, like, 7 months kind of thing. Mm. And so there's been some funny observations that I had. I scrolled through, like, so many videos. And it's all done to this song that's, like, I think it's about people dying, actually, but it's like, so pack up your car, da 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 da. I don't
know. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen this on TikTok.
Yeah, you're the greatest thing we've lost. And I'm like, is backpacking, like, something that people are losing their friends to? Anyway, so some funny observations that I sent your way that I thought would be funny to talk about. Just the amount of people who've returned in elephant pants and, like, full hippie attire, a lot of them in particular being, like, white dudes who've just, like, suddenly dropped their toxic masculinity and re-entered the world as, like, I don't know, full-on hippies. It's really funny. Also, I thought you would get a kick out of this. A lot of people coming back with no backpack or, like, significantly less gear that they left
Classic. When we left on our world trip last year, and I told people, like, I'm literally bringing 4 t-shirts. They thought that was bonkers. But, like, I just knew. I knew that if I brought more than that, I was going to discard it. So,
yeah. And I'm like, some of these are, like, nice backpacks that they're definitely, like, leaving behind. Mm. Hopefully they gave them to somebody and not just, like, threw them in the trash, because there's, like, nice backpacking gear.
Yeah. There's, like, a thing in hostels where, like, people will leave things and you can go, like, when I stayed in hostels, like, all the time, there would be, like, bins where you could go and, like, look through, like, clothing and bags and stuff that people had left behind.
Okay, some other things I noticed. A lot of people have lost a significant amount of weight on their travels. I don't know if that's a product of, like, just walking around all of the time, because that's exerting, like, a lot of energy, or just, like, severely budget traveling
and just, like,
not buying a lot of food for yourself. I don't know what it is, but, like, clearly people are, like, definitely losing a ton of weight when they're backpacking.
Yeah.
Which is different from, like, I don't know, some of the regular normal, like, kind of typical travel that people do, where, like, you go on vacation and you sort of overindulge and you come back being like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm eating salads for, like, 12 weeks. Like, I feel so bloated.
Yeah. I mean, I've told you that I definitely, like, always lose weight when we're on long trips, but I was thinking about it, and, like, it could also be that I probably do eat less because I'm scared to eat. So that might be part of it. But Luke also tends to lose weight, and he doesn't hold back from eating. So I actually think it might have to do with, like, the ingredients in the foods that we eat.
Yeah.
maybe it would depend like where in the world you are, but like when I think about our last trip, like we were in regions of the world where like the food we were eating was like definitely grown within like a few kilometers of where we ate it.
How nice.
Yeah.
Okay. And then finally, one of the funnier things that I saw was the amount of couples who had left together and only one of them returned.
Yeah.
Just couples breaking up. And they say like travel is one of the things that you should do as a couple before you get married, if you ever think about getting married, or if you plan to be together for a long time, because travel will definitely test your relationship.
Definitely long-term travel. That's different too. We're not talking like a 2-3 week vacation. Like you got to be in it.
That's
for
a
like...
long trip.
Oh, Katie. You're talking to someone who spent 9 months with one person 24/7. That truly is a test of marriage.
Okay, so obviously, like, these TikToks are really funny. Like, there's some really funny ones. There's some really wholesome ones. Like, people are clearly coming back as changed people. But this has sparked also just, like, a lot of commentary on these videos about how people are, like, going backpacking to become, like, a changed person. And we've had whole episodes about this type of thing before, so I won't get into it too much. But there's some really funny videos that people have now posted where, like, they'll be like, okay, I'm going out for my trip. And then they like walk up their driveway and then it cuts to them like walking back down their driveway as if they literally started backpacking from their doorstep. And like the person is like in a completely different outfit, but it was like clearly shot the exact same day. And they've come back with like a bandana and elephant pants and like are just like whimsically jumping around being like, I'm a new person kind of thing.
I mean, it's funny. It's like, it's a bit of a stereotype. You know,
it's that totally is a thing.
That was definitely me. Listen, the first like backpacking trip I ever went on, like I was 19. I went backpacking around Europe for 3 weeks. Did I come back like thinking I was a completely different person? Yes, I did. But it's because I was 19.
Yes. And I think actually the majority of these videos I've seen are people like under the age
really
of 25.
Young. Yeah,
like,
I've pretty, noticed that too.
They're younger folks. It's a really funny set of videos. Some of them are genuinely hard to tell if like this person is just like sort of making fun of the stereotype or is the stereotype themselves. Yeah. Sometimes hippie apparel is hard to tell whether or not it's ironic. Like, and I say this as a former hippie myself. Like I went through a phase of just like, I had a dreadlock once. Okay. I'll admit it on the show. I regret every ounce of it. But I have to just... I have to be apparent with what I've done in the past, you know. I can't hide that type of stuff. So yeah, it's just a funny trend.
And you didn't even need to go on like a multi-month backpacking trip to embody the hippie vibe.
I just moved to Toronto.
It's always funny to me that moving to the big city is like when people go into their hippie era, because like it's not like Toronto is like a haven for hippies.
Only Kensington Market.
Yeah, that's true.
Kensington Market. And that was pretty much it. Yeah.
It is true that especially like on your early backpacking trips, like you do tend to come back maybe feeling different, looking different. So I think this trend is like a fun way to just like tap into that fact.
Totally.
I like the ones where you see, because I've seen a couple where it's like people commenting like, this is what I look like when I was working my full-time job. And mm-hmm. this is me like 6 months into a backpacking trip. And I do think that those are pretty interesting because, like, I think you could probably, like, I remember when we were, like, a month and a half into our trip last year, texting Amanda Kendall from the Thoughtful Travel podcast about this and, like, telling her, like, I'm sleeping so much better.
Yes.
Like, I'm having amazing sleeps. And she was like, it's probably because you're not working. And I was like, yeah, definitely.
The one other funny video, I'll just wrap it up with this, was this woman who clearly, she had just gotten back from 7 months of traveling and she's walking through the airport with all of her stuff and she's clearly exhausted. She's like, never budget traveling again. I died. Yeah, I think it's time for me to start spending some significant bucks because I'm exhausted.
Well, extreme budget travel will do that to you.
Okay, Erin, well, have a lovely rest of your month. Thanks for this postcard.
We'll catch you in the next one. Also, like, let us know what you're thinking. Like, if you're enjoying these, definitely send us a message. If there's something you want us to talk about too, like if you're coming across media during your month and you're like, I want to hear them chat about this, send it our way.
See you in the next one.
All right. Ciao.
Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we try to answer one important question. What's really worth knowing in travel today? From engaging destinations to ways to travel better, save more, and see deeper, and conversations with some of the smartest people in travel, from Samantha Brown to Andrew McCarthy, new episodes weekly on voyescape.com and wherever you get your podcasts.